Hello there, Salim Omar here. Welcome to another episode of the E-commerce Money Map podcast. We've got a special guest for you today. His name is Dennis Consorte. Dennis has been in the field of e-commerce marketing for close to 20 years. He's been quoted, interviewed, and published on numerous publications and websites, including Inc. Magazine, Entrepreneur, and dozens of local TV stations. Dennis, welcome.
I'm glad to be here. Good to meet
awesome.
Both of you.
And I'm joined by my co-host, Shaw, who's here with me as well. Shaw, welcome in.
Hey, Salim. Hi, Dennis.
Good to see you, Shaw.
Let's dive right in. Dennis, I gave a very abbreviated bio. You've got a very rich bio. And why don't you start off perhaps by sharing with us your backstory and what led you to start your own digital marketing agency?
Sure. It's a long one. I'll try to give you the super short version. I went to school, started out in computer science way back in the 90s, had some family things go on, left school for a year, went back, ended up with a degree in psychology. When I got out of college, I realized that I couldn't use it for anything. There was no need for what I had learned in the job market unless I were to go back to get my PhD or something like that. And I didn't have the financial means to do it. So I worked in different offices for a number of years as a temp, just doing Microsoft Word, PowerPoint, those kinds of things. And I realized that that wasn't my calling in life. So long story short, I started an e-commerce business with one of my friends, and we sold it about 2 years after launching it. And then I worked for the company that acquired us. And during that time, that's when I learned a lot of the skills that I still use today. SEO, affiliate marketing, paid search, et cetera. And then over the years, I picked up more skills. And what I realized after working for the company that bought us out, and then a couple other companies, was that I really enjoy working on multiple projects. It keeps things interesting if you're not just working on one type of business. That's what I like. So I took those skills, I moved into the agency model, worked for an agency for a few years, and then started my own agency where I was helping many different types of businesses. And in terms of failures, this was where I had my biggest failure. Some years ago, I grew the business too fast. I had too many clients, I had too many employees, I had too much overhead, and I didn't have the leadership skills that I needed in order to know when to give people ownership of the accounts they were working on and to be able to set expectations in the proper way with my clients so that they knew that I didn't want them to be calling me personally about everything that came up. So it drove me crazy. If you can imagine, I had three other agencies in New York City who were outsourcing their work to me. We were doing private label work for multiple agencies, plus our internal clients. So I did that for a number of years. Couldn't handle it. It was too much. I had to shut the whole thing down. And I basically took a break for 2 years just to figure out my next step. It was a very difficult time for me. And what I realized was that in those last few years at the agency, I lost my sense of purpose. I was so focused on just driving revenue and getting new clients and hiring more people, thinking that that was the answer, but it really wasn't. And what I realized was that life is short. People are realizing this now, today, because of the lockdowns in response to COVID. We have this great resignation. Everybody around the world is realizing how short life is and how much time we spend working and why that time should matter. And so I realized this a few years before many people have recently. And I said, you know what, if I'm going to be doing this thing, let me give it another shot. But I want to focus on the kinds of businesses that bring me joy, that bring me value, and where I know that when I do a really good job for them, I bring value to the world. That is a wonderful thing. So I tend to focus on the kinds of businesses that help people, often people who go through the same types of problems that I have gone through. And that really fits into two areas. One is health and wellness, because I had issues I had to deal with after burning out when I shut down my agency for the first time. And another space that I do really well in is services for other small businesses. So the whole idea there is that I am a small business. I am a startup. I've started a few companies along the way. And I know all the problems that people face in that kind of environment. I know how hard it is to start a business and how different it is from, let's say, a more corporate pathway. So I like to help people who are like me, because not just because I've been through it, but also because I know that if they are successful, what they do is they bring people hope. Okay. In the US and in other countries, that is an amazing thing to see. When you have the kind of environment where anybody can start a business, and if they do it the right way, they can be successful, and people see that, it gives them hope because they realize that they can do the same thing too. And so that's why it's so important to me to work on these kinds of businesses that help people in different ways. So I say no to a lot of potential clients because they just don't fit into the framework of bringing joy to me and bringing joy to the world. And that's where I am today.
Yeah, that's a great story. And it's great that you're looking really, you know, your relationship with your clients, where you're helping them and you're really understanding where they're coming from. Because one of my favorite quotes is from my mentor for a very long time, Dan Kennedy. You may have heard his name. He says, the loneliest person on earth is an entrepreneur, or the entrepreneur is the loneliest person on earth, because he or she can't really talk to his employees, don't understand him. Clients, he doesn't have anyone to really talk to. The spouses, like, they've heard enough of the talk about business. And so they want to, you know, it's great for them to be able to talk to a business advisor, a consultant who really understands them, takes the time to understand them, talks their talk. And I kind of sense that that's how you work with your clients. Now, what's, you know, one of your areas of expertise is SEO, search engine optimization. How's SEO different today, or is it different today compared to 10 or 20 years ago?
It's a really good question. So 20 years ago, people thought SEO was difficult. It was actually really easy. It boiled down to links and content. So if you got links to your website, particularly if you had keywords in the anchor text, and you had content on your pages, and it was a certain number of words, and it had a heading with your keyword in it, and those other pieces, if you did enough of that, you would rank well. And that's how many of us did well in that time. But since then, the algorithm has changed. Machine learning has gotten better, and Google has gotten bigger. And consequently, it has changed enormously. Links and content are still important, but what's more important is really, in my opinion, the user experience. Because you have to imagine, the purpose behind these algorithms is to identify content that users are going to find valuable. And so when they're creating these algorithms, they're thinking about what matters to a user. So of course, the content on the page does matter, as does the authority behind the content on the page. So for example, 20 years ago, it didn't matter if you were an author published on Inc. magazine and other places versus somebody who just put up a website. That didn't matter. But today, the authority of the person who's actually authoring the content, that matters too. And then when you land on the website, same thing. The algorithms are looking at how the pages are constructed. They're comparing them. Machine learning, in my opinion, is really sort of a black box. You have a bunch of inputs. It does stuff in the box based on statistics. And then you have certain outputs. So statistically, if your website touches on all the same notes as other sites that are considered to be valuable, then you're going to rank higher. So yes, the things that mattered 20 years ago still matter today. And also all of these other things. And if you can just get it in your head to think about how to make great content and build authority on your site and have a great user experience and all of these things, then you've got a shot.
I really understand the user experience part, making sure when people land on your page that they really consume it, stay on the page, click around, stay on your website, not just bounce off. How about building authority? How can business owners build authority?
That's a good question. So there is the link building piece of it. There is also the existing authority piece of it. I think one of the mistakes that a lot of businesses make that try to rank well on Google is they focus too much on ways that they think they can game the system, right? Some of those things work, they do. what also works is thinking about how to do things in real life. So for example, I could get 10 websites to link to my client's site, and that will help. Imagine if in real life, I spoke with people, I had connections with people at companies that are considered authoritative. And through those relationships, I built more links and I created collaborations with them so that now we're promoting each other in a way that feels natural. Now Google senses that and they're like, oh, you know what? These guys aren't just out there buying links from a bunch of places. They're actually doing stuff with the people who are linking to them.
Kind of putting the organic rankings?
Yes. Yeah. So there's that for sure. And then if you can't do that to that degree where you're getting really deep into these collaborations, then start small. So for example, you can look at authors who are published on authoritative websites and get them to write content for you. That's right. So now you've got their personal authority on your site. Google's algorithms figure out, you know what, this is actually written by this person. I'm going to give it a lift. In addition to that, you can put some bait out there for people who have authority, for companies that have authority. So, for example, we're all human beings. We love our egos stroked. So you write an article, you put content up, and you quote people who are authoritative, maybe not at the top. Like Elon Musk may not see the articles that I put up. But if I find somebody who's got 10,000 or 20,000 followers on Twitter or Instagram or something, and I create content that includes their stuff and then I tag them, there's a good chance that a good number of those people are going to start amplifying that content for me. And then once they start amplifying that content, now I can say, wow, this person saw what I did. Now I can build a relationship with them and see if we can take it to the next level. So really it comes down to taking what used to work, which was relationships between two websites, and now making it relationships between two companies or two organizations. That's where I think SEO is going.
Wow, good stuff. How do you build a content marketing pipeline?
There are many ways to build a content marketing pipeline. I think the first step is to figure out who your audience is so that you can then do some initial keyword research and figure out maybe a few different subjects that you want to focus on, right? Don't try to do everything. That's going to be too much. But if you pick, let's say, depending on the size of your team and your company and your budget, maybe you start with three topics or four or five, somewhere in that range. And you start creating themes around different keywords related to each of those topics. That's the first step. The next step is to figure out what your process is going to be. So my content creation process is based on quality. Quantity is a piece of it too, but that comes from just having a scalable model. And by that, I mean the way that I create content. I use different project management platforms. I'll just use Trello as an example because it's an easy one that you can get for free. You can play around with it. So in Trello, you might have a number of different lists, right? And in the first list, you might have all of your, let's call them subject matter experts, right? The people whose names appear on these articles. You might have them submit pitches for article topics related to those keyword themes that you've picked out. So they're going to submit ideas, and then an editor would look at those ideas and say, okay, out of this list, let's do this segment because these are the things that people are really interested in based on keyword research related to those topics. Then that goes, sometimes the subject matter experts will write their own content. More often than not, you'll have ghostwriters. And then the subject matter expert becomes more of a quality assurance person where they're going to give you an outline for the content that they want to create. You have a ghostwriter who writes all the words, and then they go in, the subject matter expert might go in, tweak it a little bit so it feels more like their voice, and they're giving their approval on what was created. From there, again, I focus a lot on quality with my content. So from there, it would go to an editor where they're going to do copy editing. They're going to fix all the sentence structure, make it more engaging, and make it more readable, right? So we have these different tools and algorithms which look at the content and say, is this stuff that most people understand? If you're using a lot of jargon in your content, if you're using really long sentences and complex structure to it and five syllable words, that's not going to be engaging content for most people. So the kind of content that I create is all about making it more readable, nice short sentences, simple words that everybody understands, and good grammar. In addition to that, my keyword team goes through, they look, they make sure that all the keywords we want are in the right places. That then goes to the web formatters, they upload to the website, add in images, add in more links, on-site links, all that stuff. And then I have a checklist. So you're going to want to have a checklist of all the things that need to be included in every article that you create so that you can have someone on your team who goes down the list and says, yes, we did all these things. From there, it gets scheduled and then it gets amplified. Amplification can come from any number of different ways, right? You're building links, you're putting it on social, you're working on the relationships that you have with people, all that stuff. Does that help answer the question a little bit?
Yeah, this is super good.
Definitely. I find it really interesting. You're looking at both a technical level, making sure you have the keywords in the right places and the right amounts. Again, going back to, as you said previously, user experience and making sure it's readable, enjoyable to the reader, approved by the authoritative voice that knows the subject. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. The reality is not everybody can do that. Not everybody can put together a team of 10 or 20 people to produce each piece of content. So if you're just starting out, you want to think about, okay, what do I have, right? If you're a small business owner, but you're a great writer, then you might start creating some of your own content. If you're a business owner and you're a great networker, then you might start making deals with people to say, hey, will you contribute an article to my site? Let's collaborate on this. So think about the skills that you have as an individual and how you can leverage those to build this content. And then also how you can leverage your skills and your network to amplify the content.
I think that's really valuable advice there, Dennis, is, you know, we have our strengths as an entrepreneur. There are things we do well, there are things we don't do well. And it's really understanding what are we doing, you know, what can we do well? Some people are good talkers. Some people talk well, speak well. Some people write well. Some people network well and they leverage the authority of others. And so it's really kind of understanding and knowing what that is and working accordingly.
Yeah. And as human beings, you know, we need to spend time to just reflect on who we are and to understand what our strengths and weaknesses are so that we can become better people. And I'll give you an example. You mentioned that entrepreneurs are often the loneliest people on the planet. And that's true. For someone like me, it's not too bad because I'm naturally an introvert. I'm not very good at people. I actually have to put a lot of energy into just having conversations or attending events or that kind of thing. I do those things because they are necessary and I put a lot of effort into functioning well in those environments, but they require a tremendous amount of energy for me as an introvert. So I'll take like 3 days to recover just from this conversation. So think about who you are as a person. And if you lack certain traits, then that means you need to find other people who can fill those gaps. If I'm an introvert, I'm going to be looking for extroverts to join my organization because they can do things much better than I can do. If I'm not the best writer, then I'm going to go out there and look for writers who can create content and so on and so forth. And the other thing I'll say too is don't just think about content in terms of text on a page. Think about all the other types of content that exists, images, video. I would even go so far as to say that NFTs and eventually stuff in the metaverse is content. So think about how you can put all this content together and leverage it in different ways and find people who can help you with each of them.
Yeah. What's your advice, Dennis, to a business that hasn't really been online and they need a starting point? Is it organic stuff? Do they start there? And organic meaning SEO, content creation and link building and so forth, some of the things you've already shared? Or is it pay-per-clicks? And really spending money and getting, you know, on the right keywords and driving traffic to their website or landing page?
It's both. And it depends on what your budget is and what your goals are and what your timeline is. If you've got a little bit more budget, I would start with PPC 100%, because you can get answers very quickly on what works and what doesn't work if you run a pay-per-click campaign. If you're basing all of your marketing on organic tactics, that can take a long time to build. And if you invest 6 months or a year into building an organic strategy, and then it doesn't work by the time that traffic actually starts coming in, you've just lost that 6 months to a year of your life and your company. So if you can afford it, I would say, yes, start with some paid ads, because you can get answers really quickly. Now, if you can't do that, then you're going to have to use whatever tools that are available. So there's tons of keyword research tools online. My favorite, am I allowed to mention stuff? Or
of course, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I use SEMrush. It was called SEMrush back in the day. That's my favorite tool. If you can't afford that, then use Ubersuggest, right? Just look up Ubersuggest on Google. You can use it for free and get an enormous amount of data. And you're going to have to start looking into those numbers, how much competition there is for certain keywords, how much traffic they drive, and how much expertise you have in these different subjects, you or your writers. And based on that, you can make intelligent decisions on your organic marketing. The other thing you can do is, if you're more of a people person, then instead of the tools, use people, but in a good way, right? So for example, reach out to your network. If you want to write about, I don't know, blue widgets, then look at your network and say, who do I know who just knows a lot about blue widgets? Have a conversation with them, maybe get them to create content for you or with you. So I don't know if that answers the question entirely, but that's how I would go about it.
That's great. I know we are looking at the clock. We are coming close to our time. So a question or two that you have from what we've talked about so far.
Not too many more questions. I'm really soaking it all in. It's a lot of great advice I've heard so far. I do love Ubersuggest, by the way. I have a lifetime subscription on there. Yeah, it's kind of, I think you've shared enough that there's a lot to put together here, especially in regards to content marketing and using our strengths to their fullest. Yeah, really enjoyed it. Thank you, Dennis.
Dennis, what's the one question, I'm going to kind of corner you here. What's the one question we should have asked you that you're passionate about? You bring a lot of insights and wisdom in this one question that we should have asked you, but we didn't. What should we know from you?
Other than
everything you've already shared, which has been a ton.
Yeah, that's a good question. What I would say is a couple of things. First, if you're starting a business for the first time, understand that it is completely different than a job. You're going to be working on this thing 18 hours a day, and you're going to be thinking about it during the other six when you're supposed to be sleeping. So you have to really pay attention to what that does to your life, to your physical health, to your mental health, to your relationships. You have to watch your finances. If you're investing a ton of time, energy, money into something that isn't profitable yet, you have to make sure that you're covered, that you can survive. So if you can get some money in the bank before you start, great. If you can't do that, then figure out what you need to do so that you can, number one, survive to get to the point where it is profitable and successful and brings you joy. And also, again, focus on how your business affects all the other areas of your life. There are so many entrepreneurs who have amazing businesses and they're all divorced, or their families are broken up, or their friendships just aren't the same anymore because they put all of their emphasis in their business. So I would say you want to have that balance, because it's actually going to make your business better. If you block off time and you set boundaries and you say, okay, every week I'm going to commit to this much time for working on my relationships, right, with a spouse or friends or whoever. And I'm going to allocate this much time to exercising and this much time to my hobbies and different things. Then you become a healthier, more whole person. That's going to translate into making better decisions about your business, being more sustainable and lasting longer, and having a better shot at success in the long term.
Yeah, business it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And so, you know, with all the things you just shared in terms of, you know, having that work-life balance and, you know, really paying attention to health and wellness and all that really enables us to run the marathon, because that's what it is.
Yes.
This is wonderful. Dennis, thank you so much. If listeners want to reach out to you, how do they do that?
I appreciate that. Yes. First, connect with me on LinkedIn. That's where I hang out. I'm an old man, so I don't do a whole lot on Instagram and TikTok and all of that. It's just Dennis Consorte, Consorte. As long as you don't try to sell me something in your first DM, I'll probably connect with you. And then second, I have a podcast. Go to just Google Snackable Solutions and find the YouTube channel. I can't help all the businesses that I used to help because, again, I want to make sure that I get joy out of everything I do. But I can at least get you on the right track. So if you go to my podcast, I have these little, I call them snackable solutions. It's what it's all about. They're just 1 to 5 minutes long. You watch a video, you follow the steps, you can grow your business a tiny little bit. You keep doing that and your business is going to grow over time. So yeah, check out Snackable Solutions and connect with me on LinkedIn.
Awesome. Wonderful. Thank you so much. Appreciate you, Dennis, for giving us the time and all the wisdom you've shared with us. You have a great day. Sure. Thanks for joining us as well.
Yes. Thank you. Thanks, Dennis.
Yeah. Thanks both of you. This was great. And I hope it brings value and joy to your listeners.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Money Map podcast. If you'd like to hear more episodes, you can find them at ecommercemoneymap.com or on your favorite podcast directory. Don't forget to like and subscribe. If you want to learn more about the E-Commerce Accounting Hub, visit ecommerceaccountinghub.com. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time on the E-Commerce Money Map podcast.